minute. We just want to take this opportunity to ask that at this time you silence your cell phones, because the Attic Indicator is a listening room. We are sold out tonight, so we are having the show simulcast at our world-famous patio bar. We've got Margo out there to take your food and drink orders. So if you need to have a conversation, please step out there. And when you're finished, please hurry on back to the music theater room to complete your live music experience. We also want to thank you again for coming out to the Attic in Decatur, where music matters. And enjoy the show.
Are y'all ready to see this song right here? Before Patterson starts playing, I wanted to give a shout out to somebody without whom this would not have been possible, and that's Matt Arnett from Grocery on Home. If y'all hadn't ever been to Grocery on Home, it's one of the finest little music establishments. Well, it's not really an establishment. I shouldn't call it that. Whatever it is, it's one of the finest of whatever it is. Like Grocery on Home on Facebook, and then you will figure out what we're talking about. But Matt started this thing at Grocery called the Southern Storyteller Series, and he's so busy doing 8 different things all the time that he hadn't been able to do as many as he wanted to, and he very graciously said, why don't we try to work on it together? So we genuinely do not know what this idea will become. I kind of have this idea that I want, bartenders telling stories followed by musicians, body painting. We could do lots of things. But anyway, enough about that. I kind of went off the rails there. Sorry about that. Been drinking tequila with Patterson.
Your demographic is. Sometimes you don't really want body painting. You have to be careful about that.
He should know. He's a rock star. And another person without whom there would be no Bitter Southerner is that man. Because you in the top 10. But no, he's been, ever since I first heard his songs, he's been wrestling with the same stuff that troubled me for years and years and years. And, the idea that we can do it in a publication, we can do it in music, we can do it in whatever we damn well please is a very good thing. And so, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Patterson Hood.
Played this guitar out in public, I don't think, but you don't have a pickup, so we're going to do it old school. All right, this is a song I wrote on Modesto Island, and couple years ago, and or year and a half ago, and it's on the new Trucker record that's coming out next year. The song's called Hanging On.
Mama can't stand the way you lay around all day and lean on her to help you on your way. It's so hard to live with all the wildness you've obtained. Ooh. 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 set out for a drastic change of scene. From big town to town, I never let them down or take the time to ponder what it means to climb up to the roof to smoke a few. Calm down from your day and soak the view. And you wonder what the hell you're gonna do to hang on. So long, but you put it in a song that suddenly the whole world wants to sing. Move to higher ground and put some deep roots down and take the time to ponder what it means. But sometimes in the darkness of the night, a voice might try to tell you it's not right. And you close your eyes and try with all your might. Stories about little girls and princesses and dancing. lullaby I never hear.
Thank you.
big decisions I hold dear. Got a whole lot of debt and a whole lot of fear. Got an itch and knee scratching, but it feels alright. From the ditches and the curves and the heavy load. Ain't worried about things that ain't in my grasp. Just trying to stay focused on the righteous path. This is Fred. Kids he ain't seen, a bunch of ex-wives, a list of bad intentions about 8 miles wide. Trouble with the law and the IRS, and where he'll get the money's anybody's guess. He's a long way off, but if he was to ask, he'd say, I'm trying to stay on it. I'm trying to stay focused as we drive down the road, like back in our school before the heavy load. Now the brakes are thin and the curves are flat. We're trying to stay focused on the righteous path. We're trying to stay focused on the righteous path. Just a little bit more of the vocal check, and if you want to wetten it up just a hair too, that might be good. Because I have been sick, and so my voice is kind of still a little screwed up. So it's great to be here, and I've had such a good time. And even sick, it was fun last week. So, at least for me, I don't know. I'm not being presumptuous or nothing. Thank you. So, can you wetten that up a little bit? Check. Hello. Check. All right, that's a little better. So, I did this one last week, but I'm going to do it again if it's okay. It's a song I wrote about a character named Billy Ringo. Billy Ringo always says the fish don't bite. You get a break to save my life. Get a break for all my life. Fell out the window with the glass bong in his hand. On the ground he did land. On his back with the smoking in his hand. Billy Ringo says he nearly crashed his car on the winding roads not far from the house he used to live in. Said he felt them tires lifting off the pavement, but he pulled it out in time and he made it home by five. He said, I'm only looking for an acceptable level of bullshit I can live with, but something's gotta give. And I never could stand that son of a bitch there in the mirror, staring back at me, staring back at me. Billy Ringo likes to play his music loud, says he never was allowed to become the things he said that he was destined for. The nights drinking at the bar, talking about his shiny star and its impending incline. He said, I'm only looking for an acceptable level of bullshit I can live with, but something's gotta give. And I wrote it in a movie, it would all end differently and be better than the truth, better than the truth. Last time I saw Billy, he was drinking at the bar. We went up and made some small talk. He invited me over and he started giving me all the paintings on his wall. Said he wanted you to have them, but he wouldn't stay with four. And if I wrote it in a movie, it would end there on the ground. Like I said there in the first verse, that's how he would be found. I would spare the movie goers all the bitter sad details, better than the truth. I would spare the movie goers all the bitter sad details, better than the truth. So, I'm gonna send this one out to I'm gonna send this one out to my in-laws. Thank y'all for coming. Cause y'all know what I'm talking about. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I love her like y'all do. I had this great idea this summer. Christmas is always such an ordeal at my house because my wife is just so spirited. And, you know, I grew up in a home where, like, my mom thought it was a good idea to, like, tell the kids that mom and dad wanted to get divorced, like, the day before Christmas Eve. So I grew up in a home where Christmas was kind of like a, at best, very, there were issues with it. I mean, I love me some Santa Claus and some presents and shit, but at the same time, I got a little disillusioned with that as I got older, too. You know, my mom would tell you that on Christmas Day. It's like, you know it's all bullshit, right? I mean, yeah. So anyway, you know, obviously her parents did a real good job because she loves Christmas. And she's just all about that shit. And then we had kids, and oh my God. You know, that was like going from snorting a little Christmas to mainlining Christmas, to putting Christmas in a motherfucking IV and just sitting there and having it run into your arm 24 hours a day. And you know, I mean, as a dad, I'm awful thankful that she's that way, because the kids, I mean, you know, our kids got a puppy for Christmas last year. I mean, you know, our kids, Christmas rules for our kids, and I'm really glad about that, because I don't want them to grow up, you know, all Vic Chestnut about Christmas or anything. There, I said it. That's for you, motherfucker. I got this great idea this year. It's like I know what I'm gonna do. We're gonna travel for Christmas. We're gonna go on a trip, and we're just gonna be somewhere so far we have to fly there. And the mere limitations of what you can do on an airplane is gonna get my Christmas under control, into where it's like something I can deal with. And so we're going to Portland for Christmas, and we're leaving Tuesday, and I've been just working just crazy around the clock, because it ain't free, and we're having to work at it. So I've been playing all these shows all over the place and having a great time, but nonetheless, you know, I got sick, and it's been some work involved, too. And I'm going to Denver in a couple of days, and I love Denver, but I'm going to Denver, and then I come home for less than 24 hours, and then we're going to Portland. That's what I'm saying. But my plan didn't work either, because someone told her she could just like ship shit out there. So she's basically packing our entire house into boxes and mailing it to Portland, where we will then have to pack it into boxes and mail it home. I love her. So at any rate, I wrote this song probably about the time my future was all actually occurring to me. And I want to send this out to my in-laws, because they know what I'm talking about. And so, and of course, to my beloved sweet wife, Rebecca, who I wrote it for, and the kids, because I wrote it for them too. But this song's called Daddy Needs a Drink.
Poor little fall, Daddy needs a drink. so mama fix one quick. Pour it nice and strong with the clean outfit on. Daddy needs a drink, so mama fix one quick. Pour it nice and strong with your cleaning outfit on.
That you make sure you put a sweet slant on it so I don't get in trouble. I don't want no trouble, it's almost Christmas. I did this one last week or not, but if I did, just forgive me. I'm probably last week I took so much cold medicine that I did, it's kind of all blurry. So usually if I'm doing like two nights in a row somewhere, I try to change it up a bunch, but that's, y'all can tell me if I'm screwing up and I'll start over. I've been enjoying the Bitter Southerner, and I want to send this one out to Chuck. Actually, I did this last week, so I think I sent this one out to you last week too. I'm gonna do it again. But when I first met Chuck, we were playing the Star Bar a bunch, and we got to be friends. And Chuck's secretly a really good songwriter too, by the way. He don't tell nobody, but he is. I was working this job up on up I-75. I was living in Athens, and I was commuting to this job up I-75, and it was like doing sound for like corporate events, and it was terrible, terrible job. And I was commuting, and the commute from Athens to Atlanta sucks, and especially, I mean, up I-75, there's like, there's no way, you can't get there from here. It was just like, and it was terrible. And it was during the dead of summer, and my car didn't have air conditioning. It was a heat wave and all that. And Chuck was nice enough to let me crash at his house a bunch of nights so I didn't have to go home. And so one afternoon I'd gotten home from work, and I'm at his house, and he's still at work. And I end up in the bathroom, and he had like, you know, some magazines in there, and I'm looking through, and I end up reading this article in Esquire about the only two people in America at that time in prison for consensual brother-sister incest. And it was a terrible story, and it was so sad and terrible, and so of course I had to write a song about it. So we're going to go ahead and get the sister fucking out of the way. But I just want to. But as the punchline of the song, and probably the reason I chose to write about it is because I was so happy reading the story to see that they weren't from Alabama or Georgia or Mississippi or even the below the they were from fucking Wisconsin. Wow, they do that up there. Awesome. But I wrote the song a couple of months later, and I didn't really keep my facts straight. And later on, I reread the article. Some fan sent it to me years later, and I reread it, and I had it all right except for the state. And in the song, it's Michigan. But at that time, I'd never been to Michigan or Wisconsin, so they all looked alike to me. So this song's called The Deeper End. Time you were born, there were four other siblings, with your mama waiting, your daddy in jail, and your oldest brother was away at a home, and you didn't meet him till you were 19 years old enough to know better, old enough to know better, but you took to his jawline and down the sand. I'm going to do another new trucker song that's going to be on the new record. I want to send this one out to a guy named Scott Baxendale in Athens, Georgia, because he built this guitar. And he built that guitar. This one and that one he built from pre-existing old guitars that he converted and rebuilt and used the really good wood that they used to use. Even cheap guitars in the old days had like really good wood that nowadays they can't even afford for the really expensive guitars. So he takes those old guitars and the things that are really good about them and replaces the things that were kind of shoddy and cheap in the beginning or worn out through the years, and he makes these beautiful instruments out of it. And this is a mandocello that he converted from an old K guitar from the late 50s. And I picked it up and I wrote a song on it immediately and just fell in love with it. And so I had to have one, and he built this one for me. And so I wrote this song on it. And it's on the new record. And this song's about political assholery. There's a lot of it. That's one thing that cuts across both party lines, is they can all act like assholes sometimes. Some more than others, maybe. This song's bipartisan, but I ain't. And the thing about the assholes in politics, is, you know, there's one and he blows up and he's all over the papers and you're seeing things and hearing things that you don't really want to know about them. You know, whether they're smoking crack in office or showing off their underwear on the internet or having illicit affairs on their dying wives or whatever they're doing. You know, it cuts across it all. And then they're gone. It's like, ah, goddamn, they're gone. I'm not here about them anymore. And then someone else comes along and does the exact goddamn same thing. Someone else is playing the part of him. Thank you.
thing is just to do a better way. Sell the cow that you can get for free.
Most of all, I like bulldozers.
Everybody having an okay time? Y'all having fun? I want to thank Charles McNair for coming and sharing that really beautiful piece with us. How about a story?
Get it on.
I don't think I played this last week. I didn't do Box of Spiders last week, right? Okay. My grandmother was like the sweetest woman in the world, and Sissy, I called her, and actually everybody called her Sissy, and I think it originated from her brothers. I think they named her that in the 1920s or something. But that's all she ever was to me. She was Sissy, and she was awesome and great. And her mother-in-law was Grand-Grand, and by the time I was born, I still had two great grandparents at the time I was born. I had Grand-Grand and her husband, the General. And the general was never really in the military or nothing like that. I think he was the general because he could drink anybody in Lauderdale County under the table. And when he was on, he was an amazing gambler. And sometimes he was on. When my granddaddy was a little boy, when he was 12 years old, he ran away from home, and he hoboed all over America on trains from the time he was 12 to 14 in the height of the Great Depression. This is like 1932 through 1934, and it's like the great American novel, except no one bothered to write it down, and there's no one left alive that actually knows what happened. But someday I might make a bunch up and try to write it. But when he got home from his adventure, no one even asked him where he'd been. I mean, it's like he doesn't even acknowledge he'd been gone. It's like your chores still ain't been done. You got 2 years of chores you ain't done. And Grand-Grand, she was steeped in the Lord from the Church of Christ. She was Church of Christ, and which was always an issue with my grandmother, because my grandmother was raised Methodist, and the Church of Christ all thought the Methodists were going to hell. And the Methodists didn't necessarily think the Church of Christ were going to hell, but they were kind of pissed off at them for thinking they were going to hell. And then you add on, you know, the typical mother-in-law issues, which I don't have. The typical mother-in-law issues on top of that, and so my grandmother just, you know, And every time she'd go out, she'd take us to see Grand, and then all the whole drive back, she's like, you know, she thinks we're all going to hell. And we're not. But my grandmother actually grew up in like the really Christian home. I mean, they were hardcore dyed-in-the-wool Methodists, you know, and they were very, very super Christian and religious, and they were good people. And whereas the Pattersons were always a little bit, we won't say white trash, but they were well. The general drank a lot and gambled and womanized. I'll put it that way. And grand kind of reveled in how superior that made her feel, and that she stuck with him through all of that. And my grandmother, she was just shocked by the stories that my granddaddy would tell her about his childhood. And you know, he'd tell her about, you know, driving the general to, you know, the bootlegger and the whorehouse when he was a little boy. And he couldn't reach the pedals or see over the dashboard of the car, so they had Sears and Roebuck catalogs, and he'd sit on those. And this is true, you know, and I mean, it was literally that story. And she's like, how could you do that? Didn't you feel terrible driving your father to, you know, the bootlegger and the whorehouse? He's like, hell, you know, I was 10 years old, I was driving a Cadillac. I would have driven him to hell if he asked me. But when Grand got older, she really fell in love with going to funerals, and I don't mean like just her friends and loved ones, but I mean like she'd look in the paper and see what funeral looked like the best, and that's where she would go, and she would sit on the third row, and she would grieve and cry out loud, really loud, and people would comfort her, and she loved that shit, and she didn't even know the people. And she always said the best funeral she ever went to was the general's. So I wrote this song for us called Box of Spiders. Grand keeps a box of spiders. She says they're on me when I sleep, waiting in the outhouse for me, underneath the sea. Grandmother's about 97, and she is sure when he gets to heaven, old Saint Peter's gonna throw his arms around her and say, I've waited so long for us to meet. She put the general in a box and buried him behind Stony Point, the Church of Christ. When I was 3, when the Lord comes to take me, I'll die with a smile, 'cause he's taken all my pains and fears. Hotter than hell here.
flocks of spiders, or so she told me as a child. And I would hold it in for hours to
talk about family. It must be close to Christmas or something. Flying just wreaks havoc with guitars. This guitar has been traveling a lot. All right. I guess you can bring that guitar down just a hair in the monitors, because if you're there. Oh yeah, there you are. Yes, there you go. That might be good right there. Yeah, that sounds like about a hair. That's what I needed. So I'm gonna. You know, my mom's got a new boyfriend, and that's a good thing. It's a great thing, but the fact that she met him online is just like too good to be true. I could never make this stuff up, but it's a happy story, because I don't think I've ever seen her so happy, and really, I don't think I've ever seen her nearly so happy. So I'm gonna send this one out to them, even though it's about her and someone else. But I wrote this song 20 years ago this next summer, and. Get it right, we're going to be so much happier. So I was, I just moved to Athens, Georgia in 94, and was living with Brandon, and who's here tonight, and my mom got married, and I didn't have any money to buy her a present, because I just moved to Athens, Georgia, and I was trying to put together a band, and y'all know how that is. So anyway, I'll tell the story once I get this damn thing to not piss me off. Here we go. My mom and dad got divorced. My mom, she was so miserable and so unhappy, she locked herself in her bedroom and she didn't come out for 6 years. And in my mom's bedroom, she had 3 TV sets like Elvis the King. And she'd be watching all them shows and flipping channels, and and videotaping the ones she wasn't watching. It was a vicious circle. Then my sister graduated from school when the child support ran out. My mom was forced to go out and get a job. And even then, back in the Clinton 90s, there weren't no jobs for a 50-year-old woman without a college education and no prior work experience. And so my mom, she had to work one shit job after another just to pay the rent. Finally, faders, something led her to a place called R&D Trucking in Florence, Alabama, and they hired my mama as what they call a truck log auditor. Every Monday morning, she'd come and audit all them truck drivers' logs to make sure they hadn't been driving too many miles without sleep or something. And there was this one truck driver, and his name was Chester. And Chester was the biggest, meanest motherfucker at R&D Trucking. Chester was about 350 pounds of pure muscle and gut. Chester had the word Kim tattooed right there on his forearm. And legend has it, one night back in Vietnam, Chester killed 8 men in their sleep in order to escape from a POW camp. And now every Monday morning, my mom's calling him into her office and bitching him out. Till one day she just snaps and she goes off the deep end and she's standing up on top of her desk so she can have a height advantage on him like she used to do me as a kid. And she's yelling at the top of her lungs and she says, Chester! God damn it, Chester. Every week you fuck up your logs and you know I'm going to catch you. You know I'm going to call you in here and bitch at you. What gives? But Chester just looked my mama right square in the eye. And he said, Jan, it's because I'm in love with you. And I knew the only way I'd ever get to talk to you was to fuck up my log so you'd call me in here and bitch at me so sweet. And 6 months later to the day, Chester and my mama ran off to the tattoo studio. And he had Kim changed to Jan. And then they eloped to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and they got married to God. People think I make this shit up. I wish I could make this shit up. And as I said, I just moved to Athens, Georgia, and I didn't have no money to buy him a present. So I wrote my mama this song as a wedding present. Yeah. And it's called 18 Wheels of Love. Yeah. And every goddamn word's true. Mama ran off with a trucker. Mama ran off with a trucker. Mama ran off with a trucker. Peter Bell, Peter Bell. Mama ran off with a trucker. Mama ran off with a trucker. Mama ran off with a trucker. Peter Bell, Peter Bell. Peter Bill.
feast. Sweet potato pie. He can eat a lot of it, 'cause he's a big old guy.
These kind of songs is even if you change the names, you still run into the people and they just know. I mean, obviously I'm not talking about that last song, you know, it's hard to change the name of Mama. And Chester's just too goddamn good to fuck around with. I mean, you know, good God. But this next song, I did change the names, and it didn't matter. I go home and I'll play, and he comes to every time. He comes every time, and he's huge. He's like 6'10", and he's a really, really big guy, and he is heavily armed, and I mean, like, really, 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 like, you know, heavily armed. And so he inevitably comes to the show, and for a while it freaked me out, and finally I just kind of came to terms with it. But I played back home, and like it was 4th of July weekend in 2001, and I don't think I'd played at home in a long time, and I'm playing this like Cajun restaurant, and about 4 songs in, I see him come through the door, and he just kind of like filled up the room when he came in the door, and it's like, oh shit, I know one song I'm not going to play tonight. So I'm singing some songs, and about 4 songs later, the server comes up, and she's got this huge glass of whiskey, and she's like, the really tall gentleman at the bar sent this to you. And there was this great big glass of whiskey, and then on the napkin it said Margot and Harold. Well, I guess I am playing that. So I played, and I played a few more songs, and then it was like, you know, break time, and so I was like, well, let's get this over with. So I made a beeline for the bar. I was like, hey, man, hey, Harold, how you doing? He's kind of, he's sitting down, he looks down at me. So, you know, everybody likes to be immortalized in the song. Don't want to go to dinner with Margot and Harold. Don't like the way he looks at you.
way she looks at me. Why they look at each other like we're all part of some private joke. I don't want to go to dinner with Margot and Harold, no matter how good the food. I don't want to make small talk innuendo or go for a ride in Harold's Corvette. Scared of the basement Harold's pawn shop. I've heard tales of what goes down there. Midlife crisis, high on Delauded, Valium and crystal meth. Harold and Margot feeling no pain. 50 and crazy, big hair and cocaine. If they call on the phone, tell them I'm not home. That night with Margot was so long ago, and it makes me nervous what that big motherfucker might know. And the way he looks at you, and the way he looks at me too. Now skinny, don't wanna see Margot's bikini. So if they come, tell them you ain't seen me, or that I'm in too much pain. Harold and Margot taking aim, horny and loaded, big hair and cocaine running around the brain.
Thank you.
Me and my brother's old lady went out and got stinking. So some of the curiosities about me by the railroad tracks. So said I reminded her of him before he started up the sunroof, and we smoked a big joint. We drank a case of beer and a bunch of tequila, listening to the crickets and trains. And every so often, she just laughs off into narcotic ramblings. Moon and mascara. I've always been a holy terror, temptations lurking there.
after the funeral. She said it should have been me, but I'm still around. And I've been so wild, I'm surprised I made it to the seventh grade. And now my dead friends have settled down. My eyes were puffy and she asked if I'd been crying. And I said, tears are for pussies, but who was I kidding anyway? So we stopped at the bar and drank them dry. Beer and tequila. I've always been a thrill seeker, but thrills are a dime a dozen these days. And I found a dime in the gutter today. Tails facing up, still fucking up, still fucking up.
Thank you.
Who's gonna pay for my mistakes?
Never do solo, but I want to send this one out to Charles. I want to send this one out to Chuck too. This song, what did I do? I got something. Oh no. How long? Like for like an hour? Really? Like for a long time? No, this happened? No, it happens, you know. It happens on TV, you know. And yeah, that happens on TV too. It's terrible. I ain't even gonna go there. Trust me, it can happen on TV. It's terrible when that happens. We made a record called the Southern Rock Opera a long time ago. And we were almost finished with it, and it just seemed like there was lacking. It was like there was one song missing. 19 songs and one song's missing. It's kind of scary. But, you know, I've spent my whole life living in this region. And it hadn't all been comfortable. But one of the things things I've noticed through the years is that people keep talking about this thing, this Southern thing. And they go into great detail about what it is to them, and then the next person goes into great detail, but all the great details kind of conflict with each other. It seems to mean something totally different to everybody, and yet they're all so adamant about it. So I decided to write this song, and every line kind of, you know, counteracts another line somewhere in it. And for a long time, we just didn't even play it anymore, because we'd go out and we'd play it, and one night we were at Music Midtown, and we were playing, and there were all these people waving rebel flags and yelling for this song, and I'm just like, man, you just don't fucking get it, do you? I'll play something else.
Was passed down.
and glory. And rebels stand. That generation, whole lot has changed. Robert E. Lee, Martin Luther King.
Cut through the bullshit and not do an encore, just keep playing a little bit longer. Is that okay? Yeah, actually, that's extra appropriate, isn't it? I didn't even think about it that way, but I guess it is. When I was, you know, my dad's a musician, and I don't know how many of y'all have seen the Muscle Shoals movie, but it's really awesome. It's killer, and my dad's in it, and because he's one of those guys, he was one of the Swampers, and so my upbringing wasn't a typical North Alabama upbringing, and I'm from the northwest corner of Alabama, and I'm from the Muscle Shoals area, and so my dad being a musician, there was always a little different slant on, you know, pretty much every aspect of our life at home, and from the politics to racial issues to just musical issues. You know, my dad had a killer record collection, and I pretty much spent my childhood like with a pair of headphones on, playing his records, which I wasn't supposed to do, but I got really good at like sneaking them out of the, you know, and putting them on really carefully and putting them back just right, because he's very meticulous. So now, of course, I'm very meticulous about my records, and they're in an order that no one can understand but me. But it's kind of similar to the order that he had that no one can understand but him, that I figured out so that I could put them back exactly. And sometimes, you know, I mean, it's not like I grew up with like rock stars coming over to the house, because that didn't really, it really happened like four times, and which is awesome, you know, but I mean, it was enough to where I even, you know, I realized it was kind of a big deal when it would happen, and Linda Ronstadt did tell me a bedtime story when I was seven, and that was awesome, and that was really cool, and it was before she was a star, but she recorded a Muscle Shoals like early in her career, and she was already like super hot. And even at 7, I'm like, what you thinking about? Cat Stevens came over once. That was weird. And we got to have dinner with Bob Seger, and that was really cool. He was super nice. And Dad played on Kathmandu and Night Moves and Main Street and a bunch of songs. And Dad had a friend who ate a lot of pills and did a lot of drugs and was really, really like, he was like the wildest one of their peer group. And so I would overhear he and Mom talking about him and about how he just wasn't going to live long. And he actually did. He actually passed away this weekend. So I want to send this one out to him. His name is Johnny Weicker. He was a one-hit wonder. He was from that area. He was from Decatur, Alabama. He wrote a song in 1972 that was a top five hit called Motorcycle Mama. Y'all remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Motorcycle Mama, she's the queen of my highway. Motorcycle Mama, and we'll see the world from my heart. It was like, it was a sweet song. And Jack Davis did the album cover, and it was a big hit, and he never really followed it up. He just bought a houseboat, and he lived out on the Tennessee River, and he took so many pills. And this was back in the days of Quaaludes, so he was like, he was passionate about Quaaludes and weed. And whiskey and beer and a lot of other things. And one time when I was a kid, my older cousin would get hired to cut. We had a camp house out at the lake, and we'd go out there in the summers, but sometimes for like a week or two here or there. My cousin was older, and he had the job of cutting it before I got old enough before they put me behind the lawnmower, which was probably the next summer, probably because of this story. But I went out there with him one time, and I was like 12, and I was hanging out down at the pier while he was up there cutting grass, and this great big houseboat rolls up, and there's this, and it has a big pirate flag on it, and Weicker is on the boat. And he's like, "Hey, man, where's your daddy?" Dad's at work or something. I don't know. They're not here. Well, shit. You want to get on the boat? Shit, yeah. So I get on the boat, and they're like smoking doobies and listening to. I remember they were listening to Steeler's Wheel. Like, you know, I always think about that when I hear Steeler's Wheel. Stuck in the Middle with You, before Tarantino ruined our imagery of that song, and he was, and he was telling me stories about the Rolling Stones and all this stuff, and you know, I was 12, I was digging it, and I remember he's like, you know, you play anything? It's like, I hope someday to learn to play something. I write songs. He's like, well, tell me some songs, you know. So I'm like reciting my lyrics to him, and he was like really encouraging. It's like he told me they were really good, and I think he was the first grown up ever to tell me I could write. And not only that, he would tell Dad. And for years, whenever he'd run into my dad, he would say, you know, is that boy of yours still writing? He can write, you know. And my dad's like, no, he can't. Really? Yeah. I don't think he can. No, really, he can write. So I want to send this out to Weicker, and I don't know if you can call him a positive role model, but you know, it was you take what you can get in this life. I was 12. He told me I could write, so he had a friend forever. And I wrote this song around 1995 about his best friend, who is a guitar player named Eddie Hinton, who really could fucking write. And Eddie was a great songwriter and an incredible singer and an incredible guitar player, and he played on some records but he never could quite conquer his demons. And he passed away in 95, living at his mom's house, weighing about 400 pounds. This song's based on some stories I used to hear about him from Weicker and from a guy named Wayne Perkins and from my dad and Jimmy Johnson, and it's called Sandwiches for the Road. Nothing can hurt you but yourself. Nothing can hurt you but yourself. lost a really dear friend at the beginning of this year, and I mean really dear friend. His name was Craig Liskey. He worked for the Drive-By Truckers for about 7 years. He was our ambassador of Mertz. That sounds lofty, don't it? But if you knew him, it didn't. And he passed away during our three-night stand at the 40 Watt, which is where he was the manager for many years. In fact, that's how I met him. I used to work for him. And he was a really good friend of me during a really dark time in my life. And he was going through a bad time. His wife had died of cancer, and kind of needed a change of scenery and to get out of town, and so we asked him if he wanted to come work for the band and maybe do a tour or two just to get the hell out of town and away from everything. And like I said, he worked for us for 7 years, and he kind of reinvented everything about the job that he was doing. He was a dear friend. And we were doing our three-night stand that we do every year at the 40 Watt, which, by the way, is coming up again in February. And we'd done the first night, and he played in the opening band. It was a crew band put together by our sound guy and tour manager. They were doing Springsteen covers, and they played a fucking great set. We all hung out and had a wonderful time that night. And then the next morning, I was called and told that he was gone. And we had to play that night, and we had to play the next night, and then we had to get into the goddamn bus and tour for the next couple weeks without him, with the empty bunk. And it was probably the hardest thing ever. And towards the end of that tour, I wrote this song for him. It's called Grand Canyon. Went to Grand Canyon, and we stood at the expanse, and we watched the rocks change colors, and we watched the shadows dance, and we probably didn't say anything as the sunset turned to night. Let the spirits do the talking. And cascades of fading light. And we drove across the desert. Saw the mountain range at dawn. Heard the thunder rumbles echo against the rocks that gods were made from. And we drove across the wastelands till we finally reached the sea. And I wonder how life so sturdy could just one day cease to be. Never one to wonder about the things beyond control. I stare off into the darkness and I feel the highway roll. I feel the highway roll. We roll off in the distance from some cities far away. Lug our sorrows, pains, and angers, and we turn them into play. There's no time to dwell upon it. It's this life that we chose.
made it all worth living. It's the sorrows that life throws. The recently departed made the sunsets say farewell to the ones they left behind. There were technicolor hues to see our sadness through. As the sun over Athens said goodbye, say goodbye. Once upon a time, my advice to you might have been to go out and find yourself a whore. I guess I've grown up or something. Because I don't give that kind of advice anymore. It's gonna be a world of hurt. It's gonna be a world of hurt. It's gonna be a world of hurt. I was 27 years old when I figured out that blowing my brains out wasn't the answer. So I set out to find a way to make this world work out for me. My good friend Paul was 83 years old when he told me that to love is to feel pain. And I thought about that a lot back then. And every day since. It's gonna be a world of hurt. It's gonna be a world of hurt. It's gonna be a world of hurt. To
The love is to feel pain. There ain't no doubt about it. The very nature of love is to grieve when it's over. The secret to a happy ending is knowing when to roll the credits. Not tonight. Tomorrow night. It's a beautiful world when you can put away the sadness and hang on to every ounce of beauty upon you. Because it don't matter what you do or who you are. If you feel anything at all, it's gonna be a world of hurt. It's gonna be a world of hurt. It's gonna be a world of hurt. So if what you got's working for you, or you think it might stand a reasonable chance, if what's broke can be fixed, I mean, nothing lasts forever. If you still look at each other and you smile before you remember how screwed up it's gotten, or maybe you dream of a time less rotten, it ain't too late to take a deep breath and throw yourself into life with everything you got. Happy holidays. It's fucking great to be alive.
Z-Man, Patterson Hood, solo acoustic, Eddie's Attic, Decatur, Georgia, 12-10-2013, FOB, DFC, KFC, ZFC, AARP, Shep, CCM4Vs, Lunatech, V2, Benchmark, 82K, Sound Devices, 722. 9 feet from stage, 8 feet in the air, in the sweet spot for show number 202 of 2013.